Welcome to The Crumb, a podcast by Bake From Scratch. I'm your host, Brian Hart Hoffman, and I'm here to talk all about baking. The people, the culture, and the baked goods that make us run to preheat our ovens. Today, I have a very special guest with me. She is calling in to The Crumb all the way from her home in Italy. Giulia Scarpaleggia is a Tuscan writer, cookbook author, and cooking class instructor. You may have seen one of her two blogs, Letters from Tuscany or Jules Kitchen, where she shares delicious recipes and stories about her life in Italy. I had the pleasure of visiting her and working with her when we created our Italian issue of Bake From Scratch and taking bakers there during our Italian baking retreat. And I am so excited to have her here on The Crumb today. Hello, Giulia, and welcome to The Crumb.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Well, I love hearing your voice, but I've spent so much time with you in your kitchen in Tuscany that this distance is now making me really wish I'd just gotten on an airplane, showed up at your house, and then we could have done the podcast there.
That would be fabulous. Yes, easier.
Yeah, we always have so much fun together. But before I talk about the fun that we've had together, I want us to give the listeners a full rundown story of you, how you fell in love with food. Let's talk about Italy. Let's talk about Tuscany and the significance of the cuisine. And you do such an amazing job in your newsletters and your recipe writing of making things approachable, and not just approachable for people in Italy, but you develop recipes so that those of us in the United States or other places around the world can cook and bake your recipes, which is amazing.
Thank you. Everything starts from the fact that I love to eat. Every time I try to develop a recipe, I develop something that I would love to eat, or my friends would love to eat, or my family would love to eat. And that's because I'm a home cook. So I'm not a trained chef. I learned to cook because I love to eat. My mom was not the best cook. She prefers to garden or read. And I got my passion for cooking from my grandmother. She's very curious about cooking. She's 95 in a couple of weeks, and she's still cooking for herself twice a day, plus breakfast. So I got from this passion from her. And everything developed very naturally. I started a blog 15 years ago. The blog at the beginning was just in Italian, and I was blogging about everything that was not Italian. So cupcakes or muffins or brownies. Then, since I have many foreign friends, they asked me to talk about Italian and Tuscan cuisine. And so my focus shifted from everything else to Tuscan and Italian recipes, family recipes. And I started blogging in English as well. And that's when everything changed. So from there, I started my cooking class business. After a couple of years, I started working with Tommaso, my husband, and now we are a team working together on cookbooks, cooking classes, newsletter, blog, podcast, everything that revolves around Italian and regional Italian food.
And let me just set the stage for the listeners that when you visit Giulia in Tuscany and you take one of her classes, you are going to her home, her family home, where her grandmother that she just mentioned lives in a separate apartment. Her mom and dad live on this family. It's a beautiful family home with outdoor terraces, and you can see the Tuscan hills in the distance. It really is the postcard of Tuscany that you imagine, and then it comes true. But even more so when Giulia's smiling face meets you at the gate to start the experience. And that is where the Italian hospitality truly, truly begins. Because she's not only welcoming you into a kitchen to learn, but she's welcoming you into her home. And you meet Tommaso and her daughter, and the family is actually home. And it's like spending a day in a true Italian family, which I love. So we'll talk about the books and the classes and stuff in just a minute. But set the stage for us for, like you said, you're a home cook. But there's something about Italian cuisine that feels like that, even when you're in restaurants and, you know, kind of the chef world also. So tell us a little bit about Italian cuisine and Italian baking, and what does that embody for you?
First of all, I would say it is extremely simple. The ingredient list is short and it's very seasonal. And this is true both for cooking and baking. We worship extra virgin olive oil. That is also one of my favorite ingredients for baking. And I would say, for example, when you go out, you really have simple ingredients cooked with what is seasonal. And the same for baking. There are so many treats that are baked with what is seasonal. I think about now it's close to grape season. So we have a focaccia with grapes. And then after a while, you have a focaccia with walnuts and raisins and wine for the, you know, fall harvest season. And so everything works with what is seasonal, what is abundant. And so you really feel when you are. It's not just where you are, but when you are. You understand where and when you are just sniffing what is coming out of bakeries in Siena, for example, or from restaurants. Now you have tomatoes everywhere, and soon you'll have all the full vegetables, mushrooms, and pumpkin. So it's very seasonal, very local, and very simple, I would say.
Well, I feel the same way. And from my time in Italy, just going to either home cooks kitchens like yours or going to restaurants in the villages and even the larger cities, there's such a simple approach to the food, but it also makes it so much more delicious, in my opinion, because you're not getting lost in so many elements, so many layers of complexity that you can actually enjoy the way the pasta tastes, not just the sauce or the other things you put on it, but you can actually taste the pasta. And I think that's something that I hate to say it, but here in the United States, Italian cuisine does not fall in the category of simple. And I think that's something that is, you know, we think we're eating Italian food, but we're really not. It might be inspired by or Americanized by someone, but I love when you get that true Italian cuisine, and visiting Italy and Tuscany, you really, really get that in the showcase. But one thing that I want you to talk about, because it's the perfect intersection, is you shared with me when I was in your kitchen that modern day Italian cuisine actually has an influence from North America. So tell everyone what happened and how rare this is in the world for this to be a part of a national identity of cuisine.
Mm-hmm. Well, more than an influence, I would say that what we consider now the Italian cuisine was born in North America, which might be, you know, counterintuitive, but millions and millions of Italians moved from Italy, emigrated from Italy to North America in the past centuries, and they were escaping from hunger, from poverty. When they arrived in North America, of course, first of all, they mingled with other Italian communities, and that's probably one of the first times that people from the north of Italy met people from the south of Italy, and so the ingredients mixed. What was common around Naples, let me say dry pasta, became one of the most important ingredients of the Italian cuisine. But what happened is that in North America, they found the richness they were, you know, searching for. They found the ingredients they were just dreaming about in Italy. And they started using those ingredients. Then, when they moved back to Italy, or when they were visiting their families back in Italy, they brought back these recipes, these traditions. And this is how the immigration forged and created what is now the Italian cuisine, because now pizza is common everywhere in Italy, but it was not like this. There were no pizzerias in Italy where you could sit and eat pizza before the Second World War. There are like accounts from soldiers that were coming to Italy, they were searching for pizzerias, and they couldn't find them because it was not a tradition. Pizza at the time was just street food, something you could grab a slice and eat, not a place where you could sit and have pizza. So it's these influences going back and forth from North America that created what is now known as the Italian cuisine. And I love the fact that it's thanks to immigration and to this mixing of cultures and influences and ingredients. So Italian cuisine is not something written in stone. It's something that is constantly evolving. And we can say this, I think, for every cuisine in the world.
Sure. Yeah, and I love that you were telling us when we were there, I think, was it tomatoes or corn? There's something mm-hmm. that had a big, you know, it occurred in the United States or in North America and then became popular in all of Italy. So I can't remember the specifics, but what were those vegetables or foods that became more common?
Well, Definitely tomatoes, because here we didn't have tomatoes before North America, America was discovered, and they became a popular ingredient in the 18th century. So very recently, now we associate Italian food to tomatoes, but it was not like this in the Renaissance time, for example. There were no tomatoes. But also corn was imported here, and corn became one of the staple ingredients of many regions of Italy, especially in the north and in the mountains. And before that, they didn't have it. So before corn, before potatoes, it was chestnuts. Chestnuts were the food of poor people. And then thanks to immigration, thanks to these new ingredients coming from America, they introduced them into their diet.
Very interesting. And I you know, again, I think it's so rare to hear a story so, I think, emphatic about a national cuisine, because most cuisine for the older countries, I'm not even referencing the United States because we're so young in the world, but you hear so much about centuries old recipes that are handed down culturally, with Italian cuisine evolving. I think it's just really interesting, mm-hmm. and I wanted us to talk about it. But let's shift gears back to baking. Tell us, what mm-hmm. are your favorite things to bake? You mentioned the focaccia that seasonally changes, mm-hmm. and when we've been in the kitchen with you, we've made biscotti, and we've made what were the cookies that the open
occhi di bue.
Occhi di bue, that's right. So tell us about Italian baking. What are your favorite recipes to make?
I definitely love to make biscotti, so double baked cookies with almonds or nuts. And what I really love to make is to bake cakes with olive oil. Like an apple olive oil cake, because I love how cakes stay moist for days, and I love the aroma of olive oil in cakes. But I love also old-fashioned trifles like the zuppa inglese, English soup, that is a Tuscan Italian trifle with pastry cream and chocolate pastry cream and lady fingers soaked in alchermes, which is a pinkish liquor from Florence. So I love everything that is family style, very simple, something you would bake at home on a Sunday morning, because this is how I learned to bake. This with my mom, because we would bake a cake every Sunday morning for the week. So that's my approach to baking too, something comforting. And so it involves cakes and cookies and very simple bake.
And you mentioned the olive oil cakes, and I also mm-hmm. love an oil-based cake because of the moisture and everything as well. But you've told me in the past that the olive oil use in Italy obviously is beloved and in a lot of the foods and cuisine, but you also mentioned something interesting about butter. And at Bake mm-hmm. From Scratch, we use European style butter in all of our recipes, but you were telling us something interesting about Italian butter, and I'm going to let you tell the story from here. But the reason yeah. olive oil is so dominant in Italian cuisine and baking is because what?
Butter is not the best.
She Let's said say, it, not me, by the way.
We focus on cheese. And so butter is not the main product when you think about dairy. So if, of course, we use butter, especially in the north of Italy. And then from, let's say, Liguria and Tuscany south, we use olive oil in cooking. And in the north, we use butter. But when it comes to baking, of course, we use butter when the recipe calls for butter. But it's not the best butter you can find. Let's say this. So I'm always searching for butter coming from the north of Italy or from across the borders, because it's definitely a better butter.
And I love that, you know, Italian cheese making, it's so good. So let's just like stop for a second and just appreciate how amazing the cheeses are. But that is the priority. So butter never became the main focus of that industry. And other exactly. countries in Europe have amazing butter. So in your region, you obviously have access to it, but you don't hear about like famous Italian butter brands at all, especially here in the US.
Exactly. That's the reason. And also, cows are especially in the north of Italy or in the mountains. And in the other regions, it's more common to find sheep. And so to have pecorino, sheep milk cheese, that's another reason why we are not so famous for butter. Because cows are just, you know, in a certain area of Italy. And in other areas, they are mainly used for cheese or for meat, not for butter.
And that is why you, the Italians and everything being so regional is such a celebrated part of the cuisine. I love the hyper-regional focus. One thing when I hear you teaching in classes and when you're talking about things on your podcast and you're writing for your newsletters and your blog, you talk a lot about the region-specific things, and you just reference Liguria and, you know, Tuscany and southern Italy and Sicily and things like that. And the cuisine is so diverse between. And the one thing I want you to go back to and tell a little bit of the differences is with zuppa inglese. I think I said that right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are two regions that claim this. So I want you to tell that story of the battle of the zuppa inglese.
Yeah. So let's start saying, I believe it's from Tuscany, just because I'm from Tuscany. But the bordering region, Emilia-Romagna, they claim to be the region where zuppa inglese was born. So as I was mentioning, zuppa inglese looks like a trifle. You have layers of pastry cream and chocolate pastry cream, and in between either Savoyardi, so lady fingers, sponge cookies, or sponge cake. So if you go in Emilia-Romagna, there zuppa inglese is common, even now in all the trattorias and restaurants, from Bottura, I have his own version of zuppa inglese, to the most simple trattoria, you find zuppa inglese there. Here in Tuscany, it's more a family recipe, or you can find this in some trattorias. But we both believe that zuppa inglese was originated, you know, in our region. In Emilia-Romagna, they claim it was invented during the Renaissance time, and it was influenced by some travels to the to England, where they met the trifle, and so they tried to reproduce the trifle here in Italy. In Tuscany, we have this legend. Let's say it's a legend, but I really love the truth behind this legend. They say that zuppa inglese was invented in the hills of Florence in Fiesole, where many families from England would spend their holidays. They would have their afternoon tea, and there were leftovers. So pastry cream, chocolate pudding, sponge cake. What happens? The women working for them, coming from the countryside, they would collect all the leftovers. And just like when you make a soup and you use whatever is left in your fridge, they would collect these leftovers from the afternoon tea and make a new recipe, a zuppa inglese, so an English soup. That's why it was, you know, given this name. So it might be a legend, but I like the principles behind this legend, how you really want to use every single ingredient that is left and you give it a new life. So that's why I really love this legend.
Now that's a soup I can believe in, an English soup that's actually a trifle and a layer of all these amazing things. And it really is so delicious. Listeners can actually get the recipe for this in your brand new cookbook, mm-hmm. Cucina Povera. I hope I said this right. I'm trying very hard with my Italian today. Cucina Povera. And I want you to tell everyone first, what does the title of the book mean? And then tell us what we'll see in the pages of the book.
Cucina Povera means like peasant cuisine. It's the way we've been cooking in Italy for centuries. Is a way of cooking seasonally, locally, with what is affordable, with what is close to you, with what is seasonal. And is very respectful for the ingredients and for the leftovers. So in this book is organized by principles. So cook with what is seasonal, cook with cheap cuts of meat that are affordable, cook with what is sustainable for fish, cook with vegetables from your garden, cook with beans and chickpeas. So you find the most traditional recipes from the north of Italy, from Valle d'Aosta down to Sicily. And it is the way we eat now. So how we eat at home, how the recipes you find in trattorias and restaurants, how we love to eat. And what I like about this book is that you can use these principles and bring them back in your kitchen and use your local ingredients. What is local to you? What is seasonal to you? And reproduce these recipes.
And the book is beautiful, by the way. I love the book. I love the
recipes.
They're easy to use and make things even here, like I said before, in my kitchen in the United States. So that makes it an amazing resource for all of us to have Italian cuisine in our home kitchens. And when I was visiting you a few years ago and we were producing the Italian issue of Bake from Scratch, You served us an amazing lunch in the middle of our day. Not only did Julia do the baking for the photo shoot, she found time to serve us lunch in her beautiful kitchen. And we had something that I'm just going to toss out and say it was bread soup. So tell everyone what we're talking a lot about soup today, English soup and now bread soup. But tell everyone what that is and why they shouldn't be throwing away stale bread.
Yes. Let's start with the Italian name, pappa al pomodoro. Pappa is a word that in Italian can be associated with baby food. We call that pappa, or pet food. That's pappa. So it has a comfort in the very word. Pappa al pomodoro is a tomato bread soup. And to make that, use stale bread, fresh or canned tomatoes, olive oil, basil, and garlic. That's so simple. So very simple ingredients. As I was saying, a very short ingredient list. A quick cooking, because it's about half an hour from start to finish. And you have this comforting, bright red bread soup that is you eat with a spoon, and it's velvety and thick, almost like a porridge. And for me, that's my comfort food. And it's the taste of summer. And it's something I make quite often, because I collect all my stale bread in a cotton bag behind the door of my kitchen. So I go there, pick a few pieces of bread, and make the bread. The pappa al pomodoro soup. It's really my comfort food, and it's the perfect example of a cucina povera recipe, because it uses seasonal ingredients, it uses pantry ingredients, there's also a tablespoon of tomato paste, and stale bread, so leftovers, brings everything together into something delicious and comforting.
And I think it speaks to even a larger message of using everything all the way till the end. So instead of throwing away bread that you think has become stale, or letting tomatoes, you know, go too ripe before you can eat them, there are these things like food that uses this, and it's delicious. I absolutely, I can still taste it. I can still see where we were sitting in your beautiful kitchen, the light coming in, and just what an amazing dish it was. And I've never had anything like it before. So I'm very grateful that I was able to taste that as you were working on the cookbook. So let's talk about your kitchen. So listeners can come visit you. Tell us about your classes. What happens during a typical class? And then we'll talk about the classes that we did for our baking retreat, which are different. But let's talk about your regular day in Tuscany. What can people expect when they visit you?
So if you come on a Wednesday morning, we go to the market. We meet at a local cafe. We have breakfast, or second breakfast, let's say, with espresso, macchiato, cappuccino, some pastries. Then we walk from there to the market, where we can shop for fruit and vegetables. There's a cheese store where we will buy some cheese or ricotta. We decide the menu together. So nothing is organized. I love to improvise with what is seasonal, trying to meet the tastes and the expectations of the people attending to the class. From there, if we decide to include meat into our cooking class, we walk to the butcher. It's a little family-run shop. We are friends with the people working there, and they are really artisanal butchers. They have local organic meat, free-range chicken. They make everything from scratch. From there, we arrive to the countryside in our home and kitchen studio, and we cook together like in a family. So in my kitchen, there's a large table in the center, and everyone participates into the creation of our menu. And usually we cook a whole meal, and it's something that we eat on special occasions. So it's like a family gathering, a celebration, a birthday. So we cook a meal from appetizers to dessert. And then we sit outside in the sun, and we have lunch. That's the day. So from the early morning till 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and then you have time to explore the surroundings. We live in Colle Valdelsa, which is a small town in between Siena and Florence, and it's a little bit unknown to people, but it's a little gem. So there's a medieval town, there are nice little shops, a fabulous new bakery. The next time you come, we will go there together. So it's a little nice village that is really worth a visit.
Well, I will also say it is absolutely worth a visit. And we were able to host our very first Italian baking retreats earlier this year with a visit to Julia's kitchen. And our groups not only made the lunch, like she was saying, but they did Italian baking in that day as well, with a focus on baking. So the occhi di buoi, the biscotti, they made panforte, and then our groups made homemade pasta by hand, with Julia showing us just how easy it is. Tell everyone that's listening about handmade and homemade pasta and why no one should be buying store-bought.
Because first, again, the ingredients are so simple. Eggs and flour, or simple enough flour, a pinch of salt, a drop of olive oil, and it's fun. It's relaxing. I realized I wanted to work with food. When coming back from my office job, I would make fresh pasta. And my mom was like, you are strange, because after a whole day of working, I was making fresh pasta. That's because it's so easy, it's so relaxing, it's satisfying. And you don't need a lot of instruments. Sometimes a rolling pin, a hand roll pasta machine are enough. Or if you want to make pisci, the thickened made spaghetti we make here in Tuscany, it's just flour and water, no tools, just your hands. And so it's something fun, relaxing, and delicious when you get to eat that.
I will just attest to the fact that during the course of our baking retreats, I had 4 lunches in a row with Julia, and the pasta was delicious each and every day. I looked forward to it. I never got sick of it. And I even came home and made more pasta. So if that tells you a little bit about how addicting it is and so easy, it was really amazing. And we are so excited because we are going to be back in Julia's kitchen next May. We are doing another Italian baking retreat where we will be able to step back into that amazing Tuscan kitchen. And for anyone listening and wants more information, visit bakefromscratch.com. And you can join us in Tuscany and other regions on this trip, but we will be in the kitchen with Julia again. I can't wait.
Yeah, me too, because this time I have so many new things to show you, so I really can't wait.
Well, now my excitement's even getting bigger, and I can't wait to be there and find out the new stuff and to visit the bakery. So we've got a field trip in our future too.
Yes, absolutely.
So you also have a podcast. So maybe one day I will be on your podcast and we'll just start trading off interview days. So tell everyone about your podcast so that after this episode of The Crumb, they can keep listening to you wherever they listen to podcasts.
It's Cooking with an Italian Accent, because I speak with an Italian accent and I cook with an Italian accent. And so I'm the voice. Tommaso, my husband, is the producer of this podcast, so we work together in this as well. And I like to share stories about Italian cuisine, recipes, interviews with people. And I love to have Italians in my podcast too. Sometimes it's a little bit difficult with the English, but it's fun to bring also local stories to an international audience. And so you will listen about stories about new cookbooks from Italian writers or agriturismi. There are like young girls working in agriturismo and cooking every day for all the people there, or cooking in the mountains. So it's a little like a little windows on the Italian stories of people that work with food in Italy.
And I love listening to your podcast, and I hope everyone listening today will also do the same. But before we finish, I just want to say congratulations on your new book. And for everyone listening, if you don't already have a copy of Cucina Povera, be sure to get your copy, bring the Italian cuisine into your kitchen, and start interacting with Julia on social media, read her newsletter. I think it's amazing. There's even a premium newsletter with recipes and lots of great things coming out of her Tuscan kitchen. And after this conversation, I hope you see a surge from our listeners.
I really hope so. So you can find me on my newsletter, Letters from Tuscany, or on the blog, Jules Kitchen, or on the book, Cucina Povera.
Perfect. And Julia, thanks for joining us on The Crumb. This has been such a fun conversation.
Thank you so, so much. I can't wait to have you here in my studio again soon.
I can't wait. Travel is actually what inspired my love for baking, and what a great episode today. You know, the thing about having guests from different parts of the world is the opportunity for us to learn something about their culture, their food, and their people. And I believe that is truly what connects us. And I can't wait to see what else our future guests can teach us about baking in the culinary world. But for today, that's it. It's your turn now. So everyone listening, preheat your ovens. It's time to bake and make something Italian while you're at it from Jules' cookbook. I think that's a great idea. And we will chat next time here on The Crumb, and I can't wait for the next episode. If you liked our podcast, please rate, subscribe, and tell a friend about us. And to keep up with my baking endeavors, follow me on Instagram at Brian Hart Hoffman. You can also follow Bake From Scratch at The Bake Feed. And for online recipes and fresh baking content, be sure to visit our website, bakefromscratch.com. We even have a newsletter called Preheat to get you ready for all the baking that lies ahead. Finally, for real-life baking inspiration, grab a copy of the magazine on newsstands or sign up for a subscription, and we'll mail the magazine to you with each and every new issue.